Now, the shotgun start in golf is full of mathematics. There's a lot of setup work that we have to do in order to make a tournament work. So I'm going to demonstrate to you just exactly how we do a shotgun start here.
And here we go.
All right, all right, all right. Gentlemen, start your engine!
Greetings and welcome to a Monday edition of the Shotgun Start. It is March 18th. Shane, how we doing?
I'm doing well. Do you have to write down Shane to make sure you don't say Andy? Is that like a thing you put?
No, I just double check, look at the screen, see your beautiful face, and I pull up. I know exactly who I'm talking to. I did not have to write a note for that. I do sometimes have to write notes, but not for that one.
Feel good about that. I have to ask you a question before we get into the players. Because I follow all the social accounts of y'all's amazing trip to Ireland. And it felt like it was kind of like a Guinness influencer account. Oh, what God, do you think was the totality of the Guinness consumed by the four of you guys? I mean, are we in the hundreds?
I think we were probably pushing triple digits. Not by a lot. But when you add it up, I mean, it was like 11 days, 10 days. There were four of us. You know, I certainly did my part. I probably was leading the pack on that one just because it goes down smooth. But yeah, we were probably pushing triple digits. Not by a lot. It's a long time we were there. It's pretty much exclusive. Like, there were a couple nights where we were like, all right, I'm going to get a glass of wine or something like that.
I have a White Claw tonight.
Yeah, but it was pretty exclusive. Like, that was it. There was nothing. There's not a lot of variety. And by choice, that's what you do. So it was probably pushing triple digits. It was a good trip. We're obviously a bit on our back foot here, but I'm locked in. I gotta apologize for the audio quality on Friday. It sounds like it was horrendous. I sometimes will listen to a segment or go, I'm not doing it. I can't even open it up. It sounds like it was so bad.
I pushed play in my car. I dropped my kids off at school on Friday. I hit play in my car. I mean, I listen to the pod, you know, pretty early in the mornings when it comes out. I mean, I'm an early consumer of the Shotgun Start, and I literally started laughing in my car.
It sounds like so bad.
That was what my reaction was. So
I'm not even gonna. I don't think I will ever listen to it myself. I take everyone's word for it. We knew, you know, I'm in the car. We're like just bouncing down the highway, and I start looking at the computer on my lap, and like, the meter's going way high when he talks and it's not moving when I talk. Like, uh-oh, we might have a problem here. Like, who would have thought the AirPods, you know, one each and each ear would just be a disaster. But we apologize. I apologize. This is also a little late. You know, Andy's a little under the weather. You're on this long trip and you jump back and you're like, wait, I have like a wife and kids too, in addition to the job. Yesterday, just completely jammed. Like, my son... My wife signed him up for band.
Okay.
And just wants him to be like more variety, do a little bit more, don't just do sports. So they had some 10-minute concert. I tell Shane, if like Mozart himself had come back to life and said he's playing, striking up the band one more time, I would not have moved an inch to drive where I had to drive for this. This is how much we love our kids. Drive an hour for 10-minute concert. They're just making noise. It's not even music. It's just noise. And you got to be there an hour early. It's an hour away around the Capitol Beltway. And they're up there for 10 minutes. And then you got to get in the car, drive an hour back in the Beltway. And I'm like home at like 5 p.m. So I did lock in. I taped everything. I've gone through the tape now Saturday and Sunday. But we're caught up. Just kind of Sunday, couldn't tell the wife, like, no, I'm not doing family stuff today. I got to work again. So we're a little late, and that's why we're recording here Monday morning. So,
well, I mean, first of all, I have moments as a parent, because my kids are younger than yours. I have moments as a parent where you're exhausted or you're fed up with whatever's going on. I mean, it's so constant, right? Like, that's the point about parenting. And then I hear stories of the parents that have to drive an hour and a half each way to watch 10 minutes of band, or, you know, like, you have 7 basketball and soccer games in one weekend. And I understand that I might be in the best portion of parenting that is available right now, where they just want to hang at the house. So I'm trying to appreciate where I sit as a parent, because I know that the mileage is about to go up soon.
I'll say this, and then we'll move on, because you were locked into the players all week. It was stacked on top of our youngest child, the fourth in line. Who's fourth in line? Come on, just you got to get in where you fit in. It is now the birthday circuit starting, but she's young. She's four, where it's not the drop and I'll see you. Get the hell out of Dodge 2 hours. Which, like, come on. That's like getting carted at a bar right now. That's a past part of my life. I don't do the stay at the birthday party and chat with the other parents for 2 hours. Well, that was stacked on top of the band. It was like I left my house at 1. I got home at like 5:30. But
smacked in the face of real life. Well, I mean, in real life stuff is we now have Tiger 2.0. And I feel comfortable saying stuff like that with what we've seen from Scottie Scheffler, Brendan. I mean, you watched Sunday, which I know you obviously got a chance to watch it and rewatch it into Monday morning. What you didn't see was this guy almost didn't even play on the weekend. He has this kind of neck issue. He's sitting in this chair. Claire Rogers posted some awesome images, like some Photoshops about Scottie Scheffler and dealing with the neck injury. But I forgot. I looked this up this morning. I mean, this guy went into the weekend six back of Wyndham Clark. You know, Wyndham Clark has a four-shot lead, six shots clear of Scottie Scheffler going into the weekend. And it seemed like the second best player on the PGA Tour this year was kind of going to waltz towards, you know, a big, big victory and another big victory in his career. And then Scottie just lasso out, baby. No, thank you. I'll catch everybody and pass you guys on Sunday. I mean, it's – I don't want to say he's like the closest we've seen to Tiger, but – it feels like the way he plays golf is very Tiger-like.
It seems like we are invoking that name. I think there's some, you know, that with all the billion caveats, right? He's not Tiger. He's never going to be Tiger. No one's ever going to do that again. But like, there's some underlying data that suggests that. I'll go non-data. I'll go sort of testimony from the other players. I think what's interesting about this, like you just said, the lasso and the chase, he kind of gave him a break, or the golf gods gave the Wyndham Clark, who might be playing the best golf in the world, not some chumps who had a lucky Thursday and Friday. That, like, Wyndham Clark has maybe been like non-Scotty division, the best player in the world since whatever you want to say, May of last year. So he gave them a break with his injury. Like, he threw him a bone. He Friday and Saturday, he talked yesterday about, like, I couldn't hit that shot the last 2 days because of the injury. I think it was the 3 or 4 iron into 16, right? He's like, I couldn't take a full smash at a four into I couldn't hit that or go that hard the last 2 days. Like, he threw them a bone, and still he's chasing them down. Still he's winning in regulation and clearance. So that's what I think, like, that sort of, aside from the statistics, you had Tiger, you know, obviously he would give other fields cracks with injuries, right? And still would overcome that often. And I just listened to the other players. Like Harman said, you know, he's the best player in the world, and this is a championship golf course. And so as far as you look at it on paper, the best player won. That's kind of what you want in a golf tournament. We had our chances. He's just performed. He's out-executed two or three more times than the rest of us. Xander goes, not surprised to see him up there. It's just another week, quote-unquote, it's just another week about seeing the charge come. I think Wyndham Clark talked about, like, all right, here we go again on 11. He finally looked at the scoreboard. There's, like, that feeling. I don't know if it's Tiger-like, but the rest of the field is ever aware of Scotty, even if he's making a move to just kind of get in the conversation. But this was more than that. So that's what really strikes it home for me.
Yeah, the inevitability of it, right? I mean, that was the, you know, I mean, a lot of younger listeners that weren't around when you were watching live Tiger Woods in 01 and 02 and 03 and things like that. I mean, there was this inevitability when he was 3 and 4 back going into a Saturday and he'd shoot 65 and then all of a sudden he'd be tied for the lead and he'd go on to win, things like that. You just waited for something to happen with Tiger. And to me, I mean, you mentioned stats, Brendan, you know, to me with Tiger, and I've said this for a long time, like, Tiger's best skill, in my opinion, was his discipline on the golf course. You know, he could hit every shot in the world. He knew every yardage. He was as good as anybody that I've ever seen at hitting shots hole high. But you go back and watch Tiger highlights, a lot of the shots down the stretch are to the smart part of the green, 10, 12 feet. And when you watch the way Scottie Scheffler plays golf, it's very similar to that. I was thinking about his back nine on Sunday, right? The 12th hole, which he was very complimentary about after the round. You know, he drives the 12th green. But it's smart side, hole high, 25 feet. And then the next hole's 13. That whole location that everybody was hitting it close to, which is crazy. I played there 4 or 5 months ago, and the whole location was exactly there on 13. It is not a pin a normal person hits a shot at, yet they were all hitting it close. Where does he hit it? Smart part of the green, 5 feet, right? He missed that putt, but it was another smart golf shot. 16, smart shot. 17, didn't quite get it up the ridge, but there was never bogey in play there, really, when you think about it. And even 18, with the whole O face that he made after the bounce he got with that second shot, that's right of the pin, hole high, where you want the ball to end. It's just, he could hit it at the pin if he wanted to. Tiger could have hit it at the pin if he wanted to, but there was so much discipline in their brain, in their game, knowing there's no reason to take this on, because if I hit it 15 feet, I likely is going to make birdie, but I'm not going to make five. And with the way Scotty's putted over the last couple of weeks, he can do that more often now, which is even scarier for the rest of the field.
Yeah, I think it's completely the discipline. I don't think it's boring golf. People have talked about him being boring in the past. I kind of came out like angry about that at some point last year, maybe even the players. Like, I think what we want, like, of course it helps if it's like Bryson or something. He's a goofball, and there's all sorts of, you know, attendant amusements around a great player. But like, we just want like excellence. I don't know if Tiger was like super interesting guy. Maybe that's sort of sacrilegious to say, but he didn't. Of course, there was a compelling backstory, and he looked different than so many of the elite golfers, and he acted like with a little bit more joie de vivre and enthusiasm. But like, he wasn't a quote machine. He wasn't. It was just excellence, right? And I think what makes Scotty so interesting, and has now for a couple of years, is like these supreme excellence. It's like these tee to green numbers that aren't really, haven't seen matched really since some of Tiger's best years. Last year, I think Golf Channel threw it up there, or Kevin Casey, someone threw it up there. Like, it's the last year was the best tee to green year strokes gained than since 06, which was, you know, pretty much peak Tiger. So I think like interesting is just like supreme excellence, and that's what we want. Of course, it helps if there's a little bit of character involved, and I think he's kind of that's developed too over time, in my opinion. But it's the excellence for me.
Yeah, and I mean, again, like, what are you wanting out of your athlete? Like, do you want a quote machine? Do you want somebody that's posting amazing stuff on social media? Or do you want somebody to be excellent at their craft? Like, I know you were obviously a Cavs guy. Did you see the Kyrie floater last night?
Yeah.
When he hit that jumper? Like,
yes.
Kyrie is not the easiest person to root for as a person that talks. Like, I like Kyrie. I've always respected Kyrie and how he's just been himself. But I know a lot of people aren't big Kyrie fans. I don't really know where you stand in that world. But when you watch Kyrie play basketball, it is brilliant. It is beautiful. Mm-hmm. He's the outlier when you watch the way he's crafty with the ball and with his handles and with his hands. And I guess sometimes as a sports fan, separating what you want the person to be maybe away from the field or the golf course or whatever, like Max Homa's, you know, funny and hilarious and witty and all of those things, right? Do you need that to transport itself to the golf course? Or are you happy when the person's just excellent at what they do? And I would say, I want my great athlete to be really good at the craft. And if their personality's awesome, great. That's an added bonus. But I don't need that to respect the hell out of the person's abilities. And to me, Scotty is like, I think you're spot on, Brendan. Like, Tiger wasn't out there throwing out great quotes when he was great. Yeah. Like, Tiger never said anything. I mean, for 20 years, he never said anything, right?
Right. Another like Tiger, come on, all the caveats are out there. One thing that really appeals to me as sort of a pretty avid golf fan, but certainly don't play golf at a high level, is it's the execution, but it's fun to watch him shape shots both ways. And we saw that have to happen. And you have, like, Sawgrass is one of the few places on tour that you kind of have to do it. Augusta may be another one, but you know, 9 was awesome. He hit a cut driver and then drew an iron and threw it back there. Like, he does prefer the cut, right? He prefers the slight fade. 18 is like, I don't do that. I think he's on the record saying, I can't hit my cut there. I don't want to hit my cut there, because if I miss it, you know, you're essentially putting it on the tee box again. So he draws a 3-wood and rifles it up there. I love being able to watch that. And Sawgrass is one of the few places that makes you kind of do that. And Pete Dye, that's like a tenet, a hallmark of his architecture. And so that, to me, is, I don't want to say it's Tiger Lake. All the pros can hit, can hit it both ways. Are they comfortable doing it? Can they execute it in a you know, cauldron like this? No, not all of them. So that is another thing that really appeals.
Yeah, I mean, we gushed about JT in 21. Remember some of the golf shots he hit down the stretch? And I feel like it doesn't feel like we collectively gush at Scotty right now as a social media group, as a collective golf media group. Like, are we gushing the same way about Scotty's ability to hit every golf shot as we do when JT's rolling or when Rory's rolling, right? I'm not sure we're there quite yet, but we should be, because the numbers are backing it up. The wins are backing it up. I mean, dude, this guy shot 65. He's averaged 65 in the final round of his last two tournaments. Like, that's his average final round score. You know, like, he's stepping up when there are really good players on this leaderboard trying to win. And again, we've kind of waited for the guy basically since Jordan's run. And we finally have the guy, and it's cool to watch. And you guys said it on the pod, like, how do you not think Scotty's going to win the Players? And I feel the same way about the Masters. We're 24 days away from the first round. It's like, how do you not pick this guy? He's 5-1, which is wild to be 5-1 at the Masters. But again, like, what's he going to finish? 8th if he plays bad? 7th if he plays bad? You know, like, that's where he finishes if he doesn't play good.
That's the craziest thing about last year. The putting was so bad. Like, the putting numbers were so bad, and the driving, the everything else was so good that it felt like something had to course correct here, right? Felt like
he's got to hit it worse, like, or putt better. Yep.
Or meet in the middle, and something would probably even out. Like, the putting was probably going to get better. Maybe the tee to green wouldn't keep up at the rate, but it has. So let me throw some more numbers. Like, Kyle Porter, like, great follow. You were amazing on Twitter. Like, this is basically how we've been watching in Ireland Thursday. Porter said, you know, the average round, you would be 2 under at the end of the last 2 weeks would be the average score. Scotty was 35 under. The craziest one, I saw Roberto Castro said he was 26 of 26 in under par rounds this year on tour. That's bananas. Now 27 for 27. He's, since the start of 2022, this is also Kyle, 9 wins and 51 starts. He's missed only 3 cuts, 22 top threes and 51 starts. Top three, 22 times. You know, 123 rounds in the 60s, 540 under par. Like, these aren't, and these are all at the most elite events. Like, of course, he's playing on some cupcakes because he's on the tour. But for me, just I think the craziest one is every single round under par this year.
Like, we should be saying that loudly a lot. Every round he's played this year has been under par. His worst round, I think, was at Kapalua. He shot 2 under one round. You know, what are we doing here? I think that was the 8th round at Sawgrass. I think Shackelford had this in his newsletter. I think this was the 8th round, consecutive round in the 60s at Sawgrass for Scotty. Like, this is crazy stuff. Like, the floor for him is shooting 70 or 69, right? That's the floor. And when he putts well, or putts average like he did this week, I think he finished 34th in the field or 37th in the field in strokes gained putting. Isn't this what we said last year, Brendan? If he's a middling putter, he's going to win everything?
Right. And it feels like, you know, when he won the Masters, I made the comp to, like, Fred Couples when Freddie got, like, super hot, like, the skill and talent. And, like, he's shot past that now.
No,
like,
offense, Freddie.
Like,
yes.
No, of course. Like, Freddie did it for a long time, too.
No, I know, but I mean, sorry, man.
That he's done more for longer. He's done it longer. I don't know if he's done more. Freddie had, like, an insane career over many years, and back's issues created that. But, like, in that moment, it felt like the year that Freddie got hot and won the Masters. That hotness has just continued for, like, 2+ years now. In the putting being, like, his, like, disastrously bad, hasn't precluded him from all these top threes, all these top tens. That's how good everything else has been. You talked about how we haven't, like, maybe, like, he just doesn't get the pop of, like, a JT or a Rory. I felt like maybe by circumstances demanded it. The broadcast seemed to kind of try to lean into it a little bit more on Sunday. This was before, like, he was really shooting up the leaderboard, but definitely at the end, like, the walk to 17, I think Tirico had, like, a nice little soliloquy about, like, he is number one in the world. I don't know that like we've been a part of it too. I don't know that like the tour or like the broadcast has done a good enough job as well of like just how good and historically good Scotty has been. That's not to like really pop them. It's just been the circumstances. Other stars have just tend to get that treatment, but it feels like there was a little bit more of a push this weekend based off of the hill or whatever it is that like guys, this is the best player in the world. He is like the superstar, megastar that we should be pushing.
And I mean, I think this was necessary, like this 2 week run, because you know, the knock on Scotty, if there was ever a knock on him, was he wasn't winning enough. I mean, you look at his major championship finishes, there are a lot of high finishes there, and there's one major win, right? So, you know, for Scottie Scheffler, when you play really well, and I kept saying this last year, Brendan, like this window doesn't last that long when you're great, great. I mean, Andy pushes us all the time, right? The five-year window of the greats, and that's kind of when you are at your best. And he's gone a long time in golf terms, I guess, of not winning a major championship. And when you're the best in the world and you're kind of put in this category of, are you better than Rory and JT and Xander and all these guys, right? The mark for me is winning. Like, you can get around the hunt, you can kind of contend and be consistent around the top 10. How often are you winning? Because that separates you. I feel like these 2 weeks were enormous for Scottie Scheffler's career. And I think as we lead into major season, winning these two tournaments is going to do wonders for him, not just in terms of the way we talk about him and the way the TV, you know, TV talks about him, whatever, but even the way he kind of thinks about what he needs to do down the stretch, because it had been a while since Scotty was victorious, right? Before Bay Hill. And now you win two huge events, going into a golf tournament that you've already won before, into some golf courses that I think set up really well for him. I just feel like you can be consistently good, and that's one thing, but to win and win at a clip we're now seeing from Scotty this year, going into the Masters, I think will bring those conversations up more than maybe they were previously.
What's crazy is that like all his skills like travel everywhere. Right?
Everywhere.
I mean, the putting crazy. Can come and go, and that's like not dependent on the
course. I guess when you
course.
Hit 330 and dead straight and right. every fairway and every green, I guess that places.
Right, like an execution test, like Pinehurst or whatever it will be, or an Open Championship where, you know, creativity is... It's just like, okay, nothing about any of these places is like, well, I don't know if I love that one for Scotty. It's just like, maybe the putting's there that week and maybe it's not. That's all it is. But he sets up well for everything. That's what you want.
I mean, he shoots 64 on Sunday, right. Brendan. And I was going back over it. I'm like, where was it stressful? Like, what moment of the day for him was stressful? He had one par putt that he had to make, I believe, on the front nine. And outside of that, it was pretty ho-hummy. And the other thing, kind of going back to your point about the golf courses coming up and Pinehurst being a golf course, you're like, all right, well, maybe it's Cam Smith golf course or something like that. It's like, how many chip shots does this guy hit to stone dead from everywhere, from heavy rough and from tight lies? And you've got to hit it lower. You got to hit it high. The bunker shot on 16. It's 16, like so often it's just a tap in for Scottie Scheffler. I mean, I know Colton Ost has kind of beat this drum that he's been like then since he was 11 years old. Like, the chipping has been this great since he was very, very young. But as good as the ball striking is, as good as the driving is, obviously as good as the brain is, the hands might not get the flowers they deserve. And I mean, the pitching and chipping, I think he's going to win Pinehurst. Like, I do. I mean, I just like, I kind of look at these golf courses. I'm like, where is he not going to win right now? You know?
Yeah. It's like, we're getting carried away, but we're not. You watch it. And part of this is like the bogey avoidance. Like, he doesn't make any bogey. Like, four is a pain in the ass of a hole. 14 is a pain. Four, he like, you know, you talking about the hands, he pitches in for birdie, took like a lower lofted wedge to spin off of it and kind of side spins in. And that was kind of basically the start of like, okay, we got something cooking here. He rolls one in the neck. I don't know. There's like the two putt, like bogey avoidance, whether it's 17, he two putted from kind of a pain in the ass on
stone
9.
Dead, Brendan. Stone dead again, right? Like tapping. It's not like he has to mark it and make a 3-footer.
Right. So there's just, I don't know. Was there one that jumped out to you? I've like watched through, like, four is amazing. 14 is a pain in the ass hole, but there's like never a doubt. Like, he just fades it like perfectly, kind of rides the ridge through the middle. Like, everything. 18, he draw, like 18, he's talked about it being his most challenging hole. Was there one that jumped out to you? The bunker shot at 16 was amazing. Like, he's not going to miss right, as you talked about there. If he's going to miss, he misses left. He goes in that little pain in the ass bunker. And it's just, all right, just pop it out to a tap in birdie? Was that one that jumped out?
I would say the moment that stood out to me for Scottie Scheffler in particular was the eagle putt on 12, because when you're struggling with your putting or there are putting issues in your brain, you don't run that putt 5 feet by. You just don't. You try to lag it up there close, and if it goes in, great. And I feel like the confidence has grown immensely over the last six rounds, kind of going back to Saturday at Bay Hill when he started to hole some putts late and then obviously into the final round. But the eagle putt on 12, when he rolled it by 5 feet and had to make that for birdie, after making a similar length putt on 11, just to me said a lot. I know he missed the putt on 13, which was about 5 or 6 feet, but just the confidence in the putter to really give that a run. When you're putting well, you don't care if it goes by 5 feet and you have to make it coming back. And when you're struggling with your putting, there's no chance in hell you're hitting that thing 5 feet by. So I just feel like that was a moment to me as you kind of look back on the Scottie week, was hit a great shot on 12, knew he was going to make birdie, felt like he could make another two on a par four, second, it would have been a second of the day, and just confidently rolls that by and then knocks it in for birdie. It was a great moment kind of looking ahead at the year for Scottie Scheffler, because the one thing we've talked about for the last year and a half of them is if the putter wakes up, what are we going to see? And it feels like the putter's woken up. You know, nobody's really brought this up, Brendan. Wasn't there a moment in the mid-2000s where Stricker gave Tiger a putting lesson at one team event or something? And didn't all the guys...
President's Cup.
I think it was the President's Cup. Were like, yo, Steve, what are you doing here, man? Like, stop giving this guy tips on the putter. And I just feel like the whole Rory Mallet thing with Scotty, it's like, if he goes on to win six times this year and a couple majors, it's like, hey, Rory, maybe keep that to yourself. Maybe just tell, like, Sean that and not the actual guy that's, you know, number one in the world.
Yep, absolutely. One thing we did not keep to ourselves, and we were in Ireland, fueled up for the four of us, was Blackjack Beef Jerky. They are our sponsor today at the Shotgun Start. Google them, the Blackjack Beef Jerky. There was a URL in our newsletter ad this morning. It's localpalletmarketplace.com. We also have a landing page, but I'm not going to get into all the URL. But Google Blackjack Beef Jerky. They sent us 20 packs of this beef jerky. Look, Ireland, we are up at like 6 in the morning. We are up before, to Andy's chagrin, before the coffee shops are open, before food is available. We often are shooting the courses and then playing the courses, and we just fly through lunch. This stuff like fueled us. This is not bullshit. This is like all we had many days until dinner. And it was came in clutch. It's like a little pouch you just throw in your bag. It's easy. It's on the go. Blackjack Beef Jerky. What do we got here? We got some. It's got an 18-month shelf life, lower sodium content than most major brands, 33 grams of protein. I'm a big protein guy here as I get older, just keeping whatever muscle I can, whenever I can on the go. Like, I don't know, I'm traveling overseas. I'm not going to be lifting any weights, really. I'm not going to be, I do some pushups. I'm not going to be taking my, you know, my protein powder if I had any abroad. So we threw these packs, 33 grams of protein per bag. And it's perfect snack, just on the go, either at the, you know, you're running out of gas on the golf course, you're at work, whatever it is. Blackjack Jerky, Beef Jerky. Use the promo code SHOTGUN, discount code SHOTGUN, 20% off a single bag or a 3-bag purchase using the code SHOTGUN, or five bag purchase, which I would recommend. Get it in bulk. Will be 20% off plus free shipping. It's Local Palette Marketplace's URL, but just Google Blackjack Beef Jerky. Use the promo code SHOTGUN for that discount. All right, go ahead. Are you gonna jump in there?
I was gonna say I don't understand why the European coffee shops open at like 8:30. Nobody drinks coffee early. Nobody in Europe. Nobody in the UK.
Ireland.
Just crazy.
It doesn't seem like, I talked to a coffee shop owner for the Explorations podcast feed. Like, what's the deal? And Andy was like, you have to ask why they're not opening at 9. I was like, all right, you want me to like put this guy on the spot, put him in a blender? We just asked him to come on to talk about Port Stewart. Now you're trying to like have me grill him. And he was like, I don't think we can get people to come open it. It seems like maybe an issue here is, you know, I don't know. They don't have the staff to open them. But 9 was... It just doesn't work for at least brutal. The American sensibility. It just doesn't work.
So I mean, like, you gotta have a cup of coffee before you round the golf. It's just so wild. But anyway, you know what? It's a business venture out there for somebody. Go over to Europe and open a coffee shop at 6 a.m. and we'll see how it does. Let us know how it does, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, we had Cameron and Matt, who are like kind of connoisseurs, who would do the they had like, they brought a mobile AeroPress thing and all that. So we had like a cup in the morning, but that was that and the blackjack jerky, and that like got us to like dinner
every day. Did you lose like 12 pounds on this trip, Brendan?
Yes. Honest to God, my wife was like, "You lost some weight." I was like, "There was no other choice. There's no other choice."
I wasn't eating food and I was walking everywhere.
Wasn't putting on muscle, wasn't working out, but I was walking like 30,000 steps a day and wasn't eating. So yeah, I had to come down a little bit more emaciated. So all right. We're going to do grades. Scottie Scheffler, grade. I think we've talked about it enough. A+?
A+ for sure.
Wyndham Clark, a lip out from going to a playoff, playing some incredible golf, finishes runner-up again for the second straight week after Bay Hill. Where do we want to go with Wyndham? Do you want to chat about it? You want to give him a grade or grade and elaborate?
Yeah, I'll give him a grade. I'll give him A- just because he had the big lead going into the weekend. And also, I've got to be honest with you, I didn't love some of the caddy comments. It's like, even if you think it, it's you don't have to say it kind of thing. And and I know we ask a lot of these guys, let's be more open, let's talk more to the media. But I think throwing your caddy under the bus is like rule number one of a thing not to do as a professional golfer. And it felt like he did it a couple of times.
Come on. He didn't throw him under the bus because they said he didn't throw him under the bus.
Oh, yeah, you go.
Remember, 17, this is right. He sent Saturday 17, he sends it off almost to Flower Barge Island, middle of the
Brendan, one of the worst shots I've ever seen a pro hit that was hitting it as good as he was hitting it. It went like 90 yards in the air. It was baffling to see.
He baptized that tournament used hazard water you'll be able to purchase next year at the PGA Tour fan shop and the crystal. He says, I'm not throwing John's caddy under the bus by any means. But it was probably a perfect sand wedge, he said after the round. He thought if I nuked it, I could get it on top. Kind of as we were walking to put the ball out, and he's like, let's take a little off a full sand wedge. As I was over the ball, I kind of got to the top and I was like, take a little off. And I just decelled and chunked it. It wasn't really lack of focus or anything. It was just honestly a poor swing. So, I mean, when you invoke your caddy's name at any circumstances like that on round a bad shot, like people are going to focus in on
that. And Brendan, on the broadcast on Sunday, when those guys got to 12, so one of the announcers on the broadcast said that Wyndham had mentioned after the round that he didn't, because he hit it in the water on 12 on Saturday. Yeah. It's like, I wanted to lay up. It's a layup hole all the time. He laid up, obviously, in the final round. And he mentioned the caddy at telling him he should go for it, and he hit it in the water there as well. So it was like two points. Now, I didn't see that in the transcript. I'm sure it exists somewhere. But one of the announcers brought it up that it was a caddy pushing him to hit 3-wood on 12 as well, and he hit that in the water. Again, it could be a caddy decision. You guys are a team, and you pull the club. Let's not throw it on the caddy. And also, when you lay the sod over a wedge and it goes 25 yards short of the green, when you're hitting sand wedge, like, are we really saying that's the caddy issue? I'd say no.
I'll go A- too. Like, insane push at the last minute. Like, I don't love the caddy stuff. I didn't like, you know, golf Twitter. There was a little mashing maybe going on. He was playing, you know, footsie with the turf where he was going to drop on, was it 11 or 10? 10. It was behind 10, right? Where, you know, he's kind of, you know, doing hot feet down there in the rough. Like my kids would play, floor is lava or something, you know, right around where he was going to drop. And so we'll throw that out. There was a little controversy last week with the 18 at Bay Hill, where he's right. So a little bit of marks off that. But I love, like, non-Scotty division, probably the best player in the world. Yep. He just stripes the shit out of it. Missed the putt at 16 for Eagle. Missed the putt at 18. I don't know. It's hard to call that a miss. It lipped out. 17, just stone dead to the top ridge there, the Ricky shot, and he makes it when Xander misses. So macho stuff when it felt like he was out of it there at the last on three challenging finishing holes. Just macho stuff from Wyndham Clark all the way around.
I wonder, as he looks back on this players, which putt he will think about more. The lip out on 18, which obviously hit a good putt and had a lot of speed, you know, it caught low side and didn't go in, or the putt on 16, the one you mentioned for Eagle, because that was not a good stroke. I mean, I'd say if you ask him about 18, he's going to say, I hit my line, I hit it with speed, I knew what I was doing. The one on 16 kind of ran out of speed, didn't really have a chance ever to go in. I wonder when he looks back on this players, which putt he will think about more, the lip out or the kind of limp down there when he had a really good chance to make eagle there and then potentially could finish birdie and win.
Yep, absolutely. So he's a runner up, hard luck runner up. The 18 lip out will be played forever, but you know, there were some missed opportunities, and so we'll go A minus for that. Xander
and Brendan, real quick, I just want to say, I wrote this on Twitter yesterday when Harmon finished up, but 19 under wins all but two players at Sawgrass. When Norman shot 24 and 94, obviously it wouldn't have won that one. And this week, every other players ever that has been played at the stadium course, 19 under would have been good enough to win. So that's kind of what we saw with those guys for the week in the golf course.
Yeah, and just sometimes like your hot rounds come, like you don't know when they're going to come. And he went 65, yep. 65. It's hard to say like he left the door open when he, you know, on the weekend, but what Scotty kind of did, right? And Scotty shot a 64. So it's a little bit of both. It's hard to like pop him for it though. Like you're 65 is coming.
Listen, he's Brendan, he's playing awesome. Like he's,
yeah,
he's playing. If Scotty wasn't around, I mean, this is the guy, right? So another great finish. Yeah. And when you and I have talked about this, and I wrote this, I did the word of the week last week on the opponent being the golf course.
Yep.
And I mentioned always wanting these dream matchups in PGA Tour golf right now. The dream matchup is Scotty versus Wyndham, and that's what we got. So, you know, that's fun. Those two guys are playing awesome.
It was an awesome tournament when we, like, kind of, you know, I didn't get to see much of Thursday, Friday. I locked in on the weekend, but pretty much all accounts, what would you give the overall tournament? People were like, this filled up the tank, like an A+.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
I'd say A+. Honestly, I mean, the only thing we were missing was a playoff, and I really felt like we were going to get it, but I think the Players Playoff is the best playoff in golf, and I don't even think it's even close.
That's a good point.
The fact that it's aggregate, the fact that it's 16, 17, and 18, you're using the marquee holes on this great finish that was designed and built for championship golf. I would have loved to see the playoff. Obviously, it's been a while. I think Ricky was the last playoff we saw at the Players,
so it
would have been cool to see that. But, I mean, outside of a playoff, I mean, what more can you want, right?
Yep, another guy just shot shy was Xander Schauffele. We'll grade him. He bogeys 14 and 15, misses the putt on 17 after putting it up, a great shot, putting it up to that top corner ledge there, similar to Wyndham, just outside him. His final round numbers are not great. Some people threw this out. Again, kind of getting back to the Wyndham point, like, when do your good numbers come? Do they come earlier? But, like, it's a little bit more of a not in pen but in pencil trend that you could write for Xander. I think he's 2 of 7 with the 54 hole lead or co-lead. Again, it's hard to win. You have to shoot 72 holes, whether those 18 come on Thursday or the lesser 18 come on Thursday or Sunday. It seems to come on Sunday more often for him. He had a lot of trouble. He had 13 runners up now on the tour. He's 2 of 7 with the 54 hole lead. I think Kyle also shared some of his like SG data in those strokes gain. Wyndham, like, obviously a lot in the green. Xander a bit more in the red on those Sundays where he's losing strokes when he's in a chance to win. He had a lot of trouble, it seemed like, controlling his fade, controlling his cut. He kept, like, losing it out to the right. Did so on 14 and 15 with those bogeys. Just kind of, and we saw him getting real technical on Saturday night with Como.
Yep.
Similar issues, like losing it out to the right. And that seemed to bite him. I don't know what I'll give. You're one off the lead. Sunday, though, kind of leaves like not a great taste in my mouth. I'll give him like a B+. That's harsh.
I had B+ as well. That's what I wrote down as well, Brendan. So we're on the same page. I mean, it's a day you can't give away golf shots, and he gave away two shots, you know, late in the round. And I wrote this on Twitter as the guys were getting to 14, but as easy as Sawgrass had played for the week, 14 through 18 was the stretch, right? That was where the birdies were going to be sucked up and you were going to start to see guys potentially make bogeys. Xander was the guy that was making them. You mentioned the right miss, kind of like whiffing it out there to the right. He did that on 18 as well. I mean, three tee shots kind of missing right when you need to hit good tee shots late in the round wasn't great. And, you know, Xander just, he's there a lot, right? I mean, he's there in contention a whole bunch. I just felt like on the back nine, he never did anything he needed to do to win. You know, you think about not making birdie from the middle of the fairway on 11. To get like 206 into the par 5 and makes 5 there. I mean, moments like that where you could make eagle there and take total control of the golf tournament. Or, you know, you don't hit a great shot and you miss about an 8-footer or 9-footer from the bunker. It was an easy bunker shot. I didn't hit a very good bunker shot there either. And you make five, and all of a sudden you're giving more fuel to the fire to guys like Scotty and Witten. So I think B+ is probably appropriate for Xander. And I think we're just sitting here waiting. Like, when's it going to happen? How's it going to happen? It's been a long time.
It's an interesting case. He's a very interesting person to discuss in these circumstances. It's like the consistency is a blessing and a curse. Like, we know he's good. We know he's very good at golf. He's very consistent, but like, he's around a lot, hasn't won since that Scottish. His wins, like, are, some of them are, you know, not the most elite events. Some of them are. He's won some loaded stack. He's just a really interesting case. And a day like Sunday, as the last taste in your mouth, isn't really changing much of the narrative around him. So that's a B+. Harman, one shot behind, no puddles for him to jump in, but at all this week. But a pretty amazing, awesome performance from a guy that, I don't know, some people thought would be a flash in the pan. I don't know. Was he just hot at Birkdale? Or I'm sorry, Liverpool? What happened? What grade would you give Harman?
I have an A. That's his fourth top eight finish at the Players. That's the same amount of top eights as Tiger's had in his career at the Players. This is a guy that really likes this golf course. And I feel like the tougher the golf course, the better for Brian, even though I know I didn't play tough this week. It's still demanding. Yeah. And I just feel like, dude, this guy's just, he's way better than people think he is. And he's showing it a lot more as of late. And I'm not surprised when he's hanging around, you know, the top of the leaderboard and continuing with these guys anymore.
Yeah, he went 65, 64. It's in the middle there. I think that was the lowest, and then 68. And yeah.
He shot 65, 64 Friday, Saturday.
Yeah, in the middle. I think they said that was like the lowest middle portion of the, you know, round and player championship in Players history. So I give him an A, solid A. Maybe that's like he has a lower curve or lower expectations than Xander when they're both a shot off. Maybe. I don't know, but I think just the way it finished for Xander, I'm not giving him the same grade. Harman.
And also Harman kind of saved Players going with Smiley on Friday as well, because, you know, they have that Friday happy hour, which is great with Smiley and Kiz. And the first guy to show up was Mitchell, who I think finished DFL on the weekend.
you
kind of look at that. Like, remember the walk and talks last year at Torrey? Max was the first one that did it and goes on to win. So, like, you can't say it's going to throw off your game if the guy that did it for the first time won the golf tournament. You know, Mitchell finishes DFL, and then Harman came in and sat with Kisner and Smiley a while on the back end. So it's more helpful when the guy goes out and shoots 64 the next day after doing that.
Another A I'm just going to throw out there is Ludvig real quick. His first time really playing, and he's never played a major. He played a Ryder Cup. He had 367s, finishes in the top 10. So that could be a problem. I'm going to throw an A out for Ludvig.
I would agree with you there. I mean, he's just, you know, I mean, he had a pretty mediocre second round. Other than that, he was right there.
What would you do for Rory McIlroy, who, you know, started so hot? We had the drop issues, but then kind of leveled out with a 73 and a 72 on Friday and then a 72 on Sunday. So.
I mean, listen, I know he listens to this podcast. I know he's a big fan of it. I know it's on the front of his car right there with the fried egg pod.
No.
I mean, I think it's like a D, dude. It's this Rory stuff is brutal. I wrote this on Twitter yesterday. Shout out to Justin Ray for helping a little bit with it. Rory made 7 double bogeys or worse for the entire year last year. He's already at 9 this year.
Okay.
9 doubles or worse. He made 3 doubles this week. You simply can't compete against Wyndham and Scotty and that crew when you're making big numbers all the time. We know Rory can gas it. And we know he can go out there and put up numbers. I think it was Solly who said he's kind of put on like a Jameis Winston performance this year, where he'll throw 6 TDs, but he'll offset it with 4 interceptions. That's what we're seeing from Rory right now, is the bad is so bad. Dude, he's hitting this left ball with the driver, Brendan, that's got no chance of survival. I mean, it is left.
He did that in Dubai, that event he won in Dubai. But got away with it because, like, I don't know. I think it was Maronk.
He wasn't playing against Scotty Scheffler. It was part of one of the reasons. Yep.
Yeah, I think it was Maronk was the main chaser. But yes, like, I think he matched the birdie, right? Like, he had 26 birdies or something.
Yeah.
And just has a bunch. He led the field in birdies. Just,
no, I think Sam Ryder clipped him Ryder, by one.
That's
Ryder
right,
had 27
Ryder.
And Rory had 26, yes, which I think 26 was the previous record before this week. So, yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's like too many sloppy mistakes, too many big misses, too many misses that, like, you're not going to match Scheffler at this point. does that get cleaned up for a Masters? Does that get cleaned up for a Pinehurst? It seems like it possible. Like, we know he's got the juice, right? He's got the juice to finish T20 with a bunch of bogeys and double bogeys. But can it raise to the level of Scheffler? Because he's got the juice that Scheffler does, but in terms of, like, you know, start to finish, he's just not at the Scheffler level right now. So I'll give him like a C. It was not, you know, after that start, it just wasn't a good final 3 days.
And Brendan, to me right now, as we sit here on Monday after the Players, I think this is the widest gap we've ever seen between Scotty and Rory in terms of how good Scotty's playing right now and where Rory's at with this game. It's been very, very close over the last couple of years. This, mm-hmm. to me right now, feels like as far as it's been, because if you remember coming into the Players, he was struggling with the irons, and he said, the way my swing is working for my driver, it's not working for my irons. And then this week, he hits his driver awful. I mean, again, he's hitting this left miss in the water, and he can't control the driver, which is, again, the weapon that he's leaned on most of his career, even when everything else isn't working. So I don't know what he's got to figure out with the golf swing and with the driving and whatever, but left miss does not play at Augusta. And if he's hitting that snap hook, you know, a couple times a week, he's just not, he just can't win. Can he finish eighth? Absolutely. Can he finish fourth? For sure. But if he wants to beat a Scotty Scheffler, a Wyndham Clark, John Rahm, that whole crew, he's got to figure out what the hell's going on with the golf swing, because again, it's leading to big, big, big numbers.
What grade would you give TPC Sawgrass? It was not as much of a brute, I would say, as in some iterations. Maybe the wind just wasn't there. It was softish. The 17 amuses me. 17 remains like just totally different than ever. Luke Donald tweeted, a bunch of people pointed out, but this has been the case. 17 remains firmer than every other green. I don't know if that's just that's all they can do with that because it's out there and it's in the sun, but or it's a little bit not true, but manufactured to create a little more fun at a very high profile spot. But yielding a lot of low numbers, what would you give TPC Sawgrass?
I would say A-. I mean, again, yeah, it was soft, but I don't care. This was one of the first weeks I could remember thinking to myself, I don't think score matters as much as I maybe have previously thought it did, because the golf tournament was so good. But I mean, as I said, 19 under wins all but two players at this golf course. So I would say A- just because it was really, really soft. And I know they have sub-air. I do sometimes wonder why these courses have sub-air if they're not going to use it. But there were bogeys to be had. I always have said this. I want birdies in play and bogeys in play. And yeah, it felt like that was the case. I will say this. I don't know when this switched on 18, but these dudes are now hitting like sand wedge into 18. It's so weird.
What? Yeah.
Like, that used to be an 8 or 9 iron, 7 iron, stuff like that. It feels like it's drive an iron sand wedge for Wyndham.
Right. They don't have the driver, and then they don't have anything approximating like a mid iron into the green, but not just even mid iron, like an 8,
right,
a 9. It's wedge. It's like something less than driver. Your favorite phrase. You less love that phrase. You love when you love when they say on the broadcast. I know that.
Every club is less than driver, in case you're right. He might be hitting putter. He could be hitting putter off the tee. That's less than driver as well.
No, tell us the club.
Yeah, I know. Tron has been barking about this, about getting a tee back on the hill on 18.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
I know it's like he's probably saying that slightly tongue in cheek, but I think at this point, at least it's got to be a possibility if it's downwind, right? If 18's playing down, then you're taking all the teeth out of the hole because guys don't have to hit driver and they can hug the right side. So I just was shocked by that this week, that how many guys like Brian Harman hit sandwich out of the pine straw, right, on 18. Like, that's not a hole that we expected to see guys hitting sandwich on.
Right. Big J for the week, I'll give him a B, because he was precisely what we want Jay to be. He is what we expect from Big J. He had the big monologue at his press conference. He got booed at the trophy presentation.
I saw that.
Honestly, I would take that as a sign that you're a real sport now. You're made like Goodell, Bettman, Manfred. They all get booed. Like, that means you've hit the big time. I wouldn't take that as a slider. I mean, it's probably, you know, the global home is a 5-alarm fire drill and they're freaking out about it. But like, that, take that as a sign that, you know, you've hit the big time when your fans are booing the commissioner. Who cares? It's just, I don't know. I thought he kept like a lowish profile, and it can't be comfortable to do this every year, the last 3 years, with all the shit that's going on. So fine. Whatever. He is what he is at this point.
I think B is totally appropriate for that situation.
Johnson Wagner.
God,
a breakout star of sorts.
Can you get higher than an A? Like, I don't watch. I don't watch live from. I've never been a live from guy. When the golf kind of ends, I go do my stuff.
Yep.
But I found myself watching the digital clips and things like that with Johnson Wagner. So I don't know. Again, I don't know if you can get higher than an A plus. I remember at AP classes when I was in high school, somehow you got higher than 4.0. You could get to like 5.0 with the GPA. So like maybe it's that level of great. But send him out there in every situation, every
good
single
week.
Situation.
Good week for him, an A plus. Good week. I'll give Sunday pace of play a D. I don't want to like nitpick. Everything was great this week. Great tournament. Tour needed it. I'll give it a D because they're in two sums. It was like pushing 4.5, 425. You can't, like, you go to your club, you're like, oh, just two of us playing, all twos out there, and we're gonna take 4.5 hours. People like tell you to go up, go pound sand. Of course, these are higher stakes. But for me, where the problem is, you're bleeding into Selection Sunday.
Yes.
That seems not ideal. Now, has Selection Sunday lost relevance to the point where, like, I don't need to watch this show to, like, put pen on paper, like, when I was 12 years old because the brackets will just be online in 5 minutes and I can print it out? Yeah, maybe that's me. Like, maybe Selection Sunday has lost a lot of relevance to Juice, too. But it seems bad that they're bleeding into the one, like, the most high leverage moment in college basketball of the year.
I mean,
it seems bad.
I would 100% agree with you. I think, was it Sahit's group that got put on the clock twice on the front nine?
I think that's right.
Dude, Brendan, you said it off the top, but I played golf. Our course opened this past week. It was opening, like, kind of opening, early opening day, right? Like, soft open, if you will. And I played a foursome on Saturday. And we played in, there was nobody in front of us. We played in 3:45, foursome, right? Mm-hmm. I couldn't imagine how slow 4.5 must feel as a golfer playing twosomes. It must feel like you are not moving at all. It's like the airplane is stuck like at the jetway and can't get away. Like, I don't understand how you can play golf that slow.
Right. And the more practical issue is you're going up against the start of the Selection Sunday show, which seems
if people are like relatively interested in golf, I mean, what has everybody in professional golf been trying to do the last 10 years? It's like trying to snag all these people that are kind of golf fans, right? This is a perfect week for that. It's a big event. Everybody's heard of the players. They know it's massive. They know it's as close to a major championship as anything they'll see on the schedule all year long. You've got the two best golfers on the PGA Tour currently going at it on Sunday. And if you're casual and you go, hey, man, I want to see if my Aggies get in, you might flip with a couple holes to play. And that's like the worst case scenario for the PGA Tour. So I'm with you.
Last one, I'll give the coverage an A. This is just a proxy. Good. I didn't watch much. I watched Sunday and Saturday on tape and ripped through it. But a lot of high praise for the coverage this week.
It was awesome all through the week. I mean, limited commercial. I don't know what sponsor that was that did that, but being able to limit the commercials is just next level. And the fact that you don't have to go to break all the time and you don't have to go to play and through all the time, it allows the golf tournament to breathe and have a little bit of character and a little bit of personality. And I thought that was great. I like Kiz in the booth. I think he's going to only get better in that position. I thought Faxon was really, really solid, especially late, made a couple of great points late in the broadcast. So yeah, I mean, you know, Tirico, I think you guys had said it. Tirico feels like it's an elevation when he gets in that position.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
Then, I mean, you know, like that happy hour thing with Smiley is so smart. It's such a great idea. Brendan, when I was working, I think it was 2018 US Open. That was the first year that I was co-hosting the US Open.
Yeah.
Like we had that split booth situation, right? Where Joe and Singer were in one, me and Faxon were in the other. And Tiger was late on Friday. And remember, Tiger shot a million in that first round.
Yeah.
And people on social media were bitching all day about showing Tiger. Why are we showing Tiger? Why are we showing Tiger? Anybody that has been complaining about the Smiley show on the 17th this week, right? Why aren't you showing more golf? Why aren't you showing the leaders? The star on Thursday and Friday of the Players' Championship is 17. That's the star of the first 2 days. You show as much of that as you can. I remember asking my producer after that Tiger round on Friday, hey, just real quick, I have a random question. Why did we show so much Tiger on Friday? And he said to me, because it's Tiger Woods, it's primetime golf, and it's Friday. We can show everybody we want to show, but really the leaders don't matter until midday on Saturday anyway. So I just feel like it's such a brilliant move. You bring in some personality. All the players walk by and say stuff or walk over to them and say what up, even grab the mic at times. It adds personality to a golf broadcast that at times struggles for personality, and I feel like it is a total win for them. So I feel like I'm with you. I feel like it was an A+, you know, broadcast for the week, and I hope we can see more of that. And I want whoever's in charge of this stuff to go to more sponsors and say, here's basically the formula. You give us the title sponsorship for the week of the broadcast, and we will pump the shit out of your name and who you are and what lines you want out there as much as possible. If we can do that during live golf, if we can show that during live golf, we will put you out there more often than we would if we go to commercial break and see what brands understand. Maybe that's the new age of showing and producing golf, because it feels like that's the standard now, is having that overarching Rolex. When we were there at Fox, Rolex would give us those commercial free hours, and now it's leaning into the players, and it's great.
Yeah. I mean, who watches commercials? Like, are you locking into commercials anyways?
No, you're looking
but
at
if
your
you
phone.
Slip some subtle messaging into while I'm watching the golf, maybe that's better. I don't know. I'm not an ad person, but whoever's in charge, it may soon. Do you have any other grades, by the way? Any other odds and ends players you want to throw out there? Like, are we good? We kind of hit coverage.
I will say that, you know, you think about the last 2 weeks and how sleepy the tour season's been this year. This has been like the biggest, like the 24-ounce energy drink into the system. It's just, this is the Trenta double espresso Starbucks cold brew that
Monster
they needed.
Energy.
They really needed. You need a shot at a Monster.
That's a good point. And like, we love the West Coast Swing, love Q1. It's just been such a bonanza, especially for this podcast, and so fun. And it wasn't this year, but hey, if we get, you know, if it's made up somewhere else in the back end and major season, that'd be fabulous. So like you said, we're pumped heading towards, you know, the Masters and everything that comes with it this summer. Speaking of people who could be in charge, the big man apparently may be coming to town. The policy board has been urged to meet with Yasser Al-Rumayyan. Apparently, maybe. Sounds like it. According to Patrick Cantlay, said a meeting would likely happen. Rory was exhorting the players to meet with them, the board to meet with them. It sounds like he may be in town. There was a private jet sent to Charlotte that was sleuthed to potentially pick up Webb after an MC hammer at Sawgrass to bring him back. Rory gave these quotes after his round. Fundamentally, Yasser wants to do the right thing. I think I've said this before. I've spent time with Yasser, and his people that have represented him and Liv have done him a disservice. So Norman and those guys. I see the two entities, and I actually think there's a really big disconnect between Piff and Liv. I think you got Piff over here and Liv sort of over here doing their own thing. So the closer that we can get to Yasser, Piff, and hopefully finalize the investment, I think that will be a really good thing. They want to park money for decades and not worry about it. They want to invest in smart and secure businesses, and the PGA Tour is definitely one of those, especially if they're looking to invest in sport in some ways. I think that's a pretty, you know, critical distinction that he's made there. Liv has achieved what they wanted it to, and that is just completely elbowed their way into the paint, like straight up into the paint. They're at the table because of it.
They made the team, right? Like they're on the team now. Yep.
It's losing billions of dollars. And like, is a smart and secure business giving Cameron Tringali the amount of money they gave him or whatever? Probably not. But it's a distinction. I don't know that Liv is going anywhere. It's not like it's going to be rolled up, but it seems like they do care about team golf. And Yasser is the big man. Eventually, like, none of this shit matters. I did love Norman had a great troll. I thought he's an amazing troll with Steve Cohen.
I saw that.
Just like, of course, I got to post this to Instagram and with the SSG boys. Like, so Yasser's in town. That's news. Anything on Rory's comments? I think that makes sense. Pretty important distinction to make between Liv and Piff.
Yeah, I mean, no comments on what Rory said. It feels like every time he talks about this stuff, it's exactly what I would say if I was in the same position. So no notes on Rory's lines.
Pepe Peter also spoke after. It seems like the tide is turning. Pepe Peter Malnati, basically, I'll paraphrase. You know, we've swung too far since June 6th, where like players were totally cut out and left in the dark and blindsided too. We might have a little bit too much control now and too much say. Is it no pro golfer should be running this organization? Players do not need to be running this organization. We should have a part of decisions, some voice, but it's swung too far the other way. We talked about the player equity plan with a little bit of confusion. I was like, I don't understand it. It's a little bit above my head. That's my peppy Peter.
Is that Peter? Nice.
Yeah. So he gets all going in his bucket hat.
By the way, real quick, Peter, 66 on Saturday, 81 on Sunday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, oh, yeah. 66-81 on the weekend.
He made the cut. He made the cut. Yeah, he's representing his, you know, the mule category, I suppose. But it just seems like it's swinging a little bit. Maybe we're coming back to the middle. Maybe not. Maybe Patrick Cantlay's still running the deal. Who knows? But they're going to meet with the Yasser. Last but not least in this news quote roulette, Jimmy Walker gave some opinions nobody asked him for, but he gave a lot of them.
Do you know where he gave these from? Was he like at a golf tournament or just a media
interview?
That's
a good question, because I believe Bunkered Online, which is primarily a European, a UK outfit.
Okay.
I don't know if they just call them up at the ranch. We're driving through Texas and turn the recorder
it's
on.
It's like an astronomy clinic, like grouping deal in Vegas or something. Yeah.
Walker not in the field, but just let it rip. You know, he benefited from those guys going to LIV last year. Like, he was on the whatever, some sort of exemption. I forget what it was, the top 200 or career money, something. Something bumped him into having a year of eligibility. Just unloads. You know, and maybe some of it with merit, some of it with not. Says he has no faith in the tour. You know, I don't pay attention to what Jay says anymore. I think he's full of it. They've kept us in the dark. He's handled it extremely poorly. On the top 70 retaining status, such a poor job of communicating that to the fan base. Even me, when I came back, I didn't know. This is unbelievable. I was so pissed off. Like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. You top 70 to keep your card. There is a lot of make this up on the fly and sort of miscommunication. Sure. And they don't know exactly, you know, they've done that with the KFT grads. Like, you know, there's been some massive changes and communication around it. And the understanding of downstream effects hasn't always been fully understood or communicated. He's not wrong in that. Wyndham Clark, he barked at a little bit. It's a lot for Wyndham Clark to start barking orders. Oh, sorry, it must have been a slip there because he used the term bark. If there were 100 players, he may not have gotten where he is today, myself included. Maybe some merit, but there's also an argument that it needs to be leaner and meaner. On having an off season, this is all via Bunkered. This is where I just tickled me. Every sport has an off season. Can we not go rest? It's hard on your body. It's hard on your family. And they're just milking us for everything. They're not milking Jimmy Walker for anything. Like, no. Jimmy Walker is a stand-in player. He's won a major. If he's there, he's great. If he's not, great. They're not milking Jimmy Walker for anything. They're milking him for quotes. Someone is here. So he wants an off season, but he follows that up with, the tour for a long time was about maximizing playing opportunities for the membership. And now it's gone completely the opposite way. Now they're creating less opportunities and it's bad for the growth of the tour. Ooh. So what do you want? You just bitching about no off season. And then the next quote, you're saying how they're taking opportunities away. So what do you want? You can't, like, if you want an off season, there are going to be fewer playing opportunities. Right. So that's my Jimmy Walker.
Can't have both. Can't have both. Yes. He's made $27 million on the PGA Tour in his career. I am shocked when I see this stuff, Brendan, from these players sometimes. And I think, how are you not just so happy in your life that this is something that occurred? That you were either a great player and you played your way onto the PGA Tour, or you had opportunity and your life is great. It feels like so many guys right now. And again, I understand that this is complicated and convoluted, and you're getting a lot of mixed messaging. But it seems like so many dudes are unhappy with what has gone on, when I think you should be praising and saying thank you and being glowing about where you sit in your life. Because Jimmy Walker's had a really good career. Like you said, won a major championship. I think he got up to 10th in the world, was the highest ranking he got to. And yet you're just bitching all the time. Like, it's just bitching about whatever's going on. And again, maybe you're not getting all the messaging you need, but their job is not to give you all the messaging. Good leadership's job is to lead. Now, I'm not saying that the leadership has been good, but in theory, that's their job, is to lead people into positive places and positive situations and potential partnerships, right?
This, the self-contradiction there just sort of delegitimizes everything you said about, like, we need refs, but we need more playing opportunities. Like, that's just like, all right, this is just a guy who's shouting to shout.
Yeah.
Which maybe happens here, because we contradict ourselves just to shout sometimes. But the one thing we're talking about, the malcontents, like the mule malcontents. How about one of the chief malcontented mules, Nate Lashley, up close and personal with the Scottie Scheffler show? I wonder, like, if walking off, he's like, all right, okay,
don't come
maybe
my
not.
U of A boy like that now. Come
maybe
on.
I don't have
come
that. On. Maybe dude. I don't have that up close and personal watching Scheffler on Sunday.
Like, I'll tell you this.
I'm
really,
not that guy.
Really strange year for Nate Lashley. I was looking at it. So he's played, I think now he's played 8 events. He has 6 missed cuts. The 2 made cuts were a tie 3rd at the at Torrey. So he finishes T3, made like 400,000 from that finish. And then this week, he was in the top 5 for a long time. As you said, dropped some shots late, but finishes in a tie 13th. I'm assuming makes similar money. So he's probably made $1 million this year off 2 made cuts. Everything else has been a missed cut. So again, hey, you know what? If you're going to play well, play well at these events, right?
These pros got it not terrible right now. They got it good. All right. That was good. We had it good. Thank you for joining us, Shane.
For sure.
He's pitching in here. You can follow him on Twitter.
Sure.
Shane Bacon. He's in the Fried Egg newsletter. He does the word of the week on video. You got some stuff coming with Payne, I believe, right?
Yeah, we have a cool podcast with Ping Proving Grounds podcast. If you haven't listened to it or subscribed, it's insider baseball in the golf world. But Marty Jurtson, who I co-hosted with, is a very smart dude. And I will say this. I have learned more from that podcast than I have from most golf stuff I've read in my days. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on it. I feel like Marty does an amazing job at explaining certain things. We have cool guests on as well. So check that out. And then we've got a podcast project coming soon with the egg. So that'll be
some
coming
things,
in the next few weeks, which I'm excited about.
Some things hatching in the
there you go.
Maybe with the
nice.
Egg. So Shane Bacon, just a savant, golf savant. We appreciate your time. Follow him on Twitter at Shane Bacon. We will talk to you guys on Wednesday back on the Valspar horse. We're going to have to maybe dig deep into this field. A great players championship. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.